Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. On this show, when we speak to Mendon author Michael Togas, it is usually about his latest best-selling book of heroism and rescue at sea, From the Finest Hours, which was made into a movie by Disney, 10 Hours Until Dawn off the coast of Salem in the blizzard of 78, or So Close to Home, about surviving a German U-boat attack. In other words, many of his 30-plus books are full of adventure, danger, heroism, sacrifice. And that is also the case with his latest, just out, but the focus this time is much closer to home, his life and his family. Togas' new memoir is The Waters Between Us, and we spoke with him recently. He began by telling us why he turned the searchlight from sea heroes to his real-life hero, his father.
My dad was one of those larger-than-life figures. As soon as somebody saw him, they'd be smiling, and he would just light up a room. And I'd been taking notes for this book, you know, going way back in my 20s about some of the misadventures, like when I almost died in that $15 raft I bought going down a river in April. I had different sources to draw on besides just the memories. I had a diary from when I was 12 years old, starting to put it together. And after he passed away, then you can go back even further and some of those events from your really young years come back.
So the book has a subtitle, A Boy, A Father, Outdoor Misadventures and the Healing Power of Nature. And these misadventures, you just talked about a story you tell of going down some water you should not have been in a $15 raft with a friend. And there are so many times where I found myself thinking, this guy's instinct for self-preservation was underdeveloped. Are you that same guy, or did telling these stories bring a piece of you back as well? And if you are that same guy, how are you still alive?
There's a lot of luck. When you're impulsive, as I was, there's luck involved. Going down a raging river in April when there's snow on the ground in northern Vermont is not a good idea. As I put the book together, I realized it's just one thing after another that was so impulsive, like trying to get the great picture of the moose. I figured, well, I'll throw a rock its way.
You throw a rock at the backside of a moose at close range.
Oh, my God. And I can remember, you know, shouting to my brother, run for your life. And as I'm running, I'm thinking my father's going to kill me because I was entrusted with the care of my little brother. You know, I'm a lot older now, but I'm still that same person. As my father used to say, why do you always have to break the rules? Why do you have to push the limits? And I'd be like, I don't know. And I'm that same person.
So what do you think you learned from being that guy? And what can young people who read this book learn from it, especially in the midst of a pandemic when risk just takes on a whole other kind of calculus?
Well, one, don't be as impulsive. But on the positive side of the ledger, I never had anybody expertizing. Like, my father was not a big outdoorsman. And so he wasn't saying, you know, when I was a boy, the fish were this big, or here's how you attack a mountain when you're going to climb it. So everything I did was by trial and error. And looking back, I think in many ways that's a good thing because it taught me independence, but it also taught me no matter what the situation, I'll somehow figure it out because he wasn't there for those kind of things.
He wasn't there until he was.
You know what? I said those exact words last night to a friend who was asking me about the book. I said, you know, he never came to my wrestling matches, my soccer games, but a little later, when I was struggling and dropped out of college, he had my back and he really surprised me. I did not expect that.
You know, I got an understanding through across your family and through the emergence of your father in the book. He's kind of a quiet background character till close to the end. That his sense was and your sense was that crisis is when it really matters. And he was there for all of you in crisis. What have you learned from that about what it means to show up?
You know, the beauty of the way he reacted, and we'll talk a little bit about the big tragedy in the family, was he chose how to respond. That's what I learned from him. He He could have become bitter, angry, withdrawn, but he said, no, I'm going to do this and life is going to go on. And he was still that fun-loving guy, despite the new burdens that were put upon him. And that's what he taught me.
So let's talk about that burden, the crisis. There's a bombshell in maybe the last fifth of the book. And let's just have you read that bombshell for our listeners. It's right at the start of chapter 17.
Okay. The fun days of college came to a screeching halt in February 1976. That's when I got the phone call. I was in my dorm room when a friend knocked on my door and told me my mom was on the payphone. I had a bad feeling from the get-go because my parents never called me, knowing I was impossible to reach and that I would call them once a month. I can still see that payphone in the hallway of the dorm and remember how I stood there stock still, listening to my mother. She told me my sister Lynn and her newlywed husband had been in a car accident. She said it was bad. Then there was silence. Finally, I asked how bad, and she said, Lynn's in a coma. I could hear my mother softly crying. I asked where my father was, and she said he was by Lynn's side. I better come home, I finally said. My mother caught her breath and said yes, but I should finish up my classes for the week and get home on the weekend. She said the most important thing I could do was pray. And pray I did.
That's author Michael Togas reading from his new memoir, The Waters Between Us. Of course, what stands out there to me is you ask where your father is, and she says he's by Lynn's side, which, of course, that's where he then was permanently. Talk about what happened next and the sacrifices that your father made.
Well, that accident left Lynn paralyzed and severely brain damaged, and after months in a rehab center, there were still tubes and everything else attached to her. And my father just said, we're taking her home. And the doctor said, no, you won't be able to do this. And he said, teach us what we have to do. We're taking her home. And for the next 30 some odd years, he and my mother took care of her at home. And it's hard to describe. I get a little emotional even now, but it was a 24/7 job. It's not like you could get a good night's sleep. You were up during the night helping her. And every once in a blue moon, I'd step in so they could get a night away. And just in a 24-hour period, I thought I'd lose my mind. It was so difficult to do. And I just marveled that they did this for so many years. And my father would say, it's an honor to take care of Lynn. It's no burden at all, but it was just this amazing devotion.
And that's what you meant when you said earlier about the choices that he made, right?
Exactly. You know, this was the biggie, and he decided, we're going to do this. We're going to keep Lynn as part of the family. We'd get her in a wheelchair. I'd often help him. And even though she couldn't eat with us, she'd be at the dinner table with us. So, and again, he never became bitter. You know, he was such a social animal. He just said to all his friends, you come to me. And they would come to the house all the time. I think it drove my mother nuts. But he never changed. He'd be laughing with them at the house while he was taking care of Lynn. And it was just jaw-dropping to me to see how he pulled it all off.
You know, your mom did hold it all together, right? I'm sure it did drive her nuts some of the time. I wonder as a mother how it wouldn't. Sometimes I pictured her as I was reading your story as a woman sort of standing firmly in the center of a hurricane. Tell us a little bit about her and how she fits in the story you're now telling yourself about yourself.
She was very reserved and very quiet, but every once in a blue moon, she'd surprise me. And one example I give in The Waters Between Us is I've organized senior skip day at high school. And by this time, I've turned my life around in terms of grades at school. Prior to then, I had broken the school record for detention. Because I organized this senior skip day, the principal was going to expel me because every senior skips school. And I had to tell my mother. I didn't dare tell my father. And she goes, "I'm heading down there." And I said, "Where?" She goes, "To that principal." And I couldn't believe it, because this was a woman who didn't say peep. And somehow she got me out of that jam. And so underneath her, kind of what I earlier thought was kind of a timid person, she had this rock solid strength, and she was there with my father during Lynn's accident, and deserves as much credit as him.
So I think about comparing your mother and your father, who were real people, but also, for me, characters, right? Because I'm reading this memoir, and all of the daring sea rescuers and sea rescuers in the other books of yours that I've read. Where do you put your mom and dad in the pantheon of these heroes that you write about?
The heroes I've written about the past, it's usually one and done. In other words, The Finest Hours, Bernie Weber does that rescue, but it happened in one evening. Ernie Hazard in Fatal Forecast, he survives 3 days in the North Atlantic. You know, he's off the charts of survivability. But you have to also acknowledge these people that get up day in and day out and do something extraordinary and don't want any credit, don't want any attention. So I put what my mom and dad did right at the top of that list, because to sustain it and not crack or not become bitter and withdrawn is a real feat.
You know, it's almost second nature at this point, a year into this pandemic, to just ask what the lessons for us are. But it doesn't have to be second nature here, because I believe there are so many lessons in this memoir that have something to say about the moment that we're in. Is there one that you would draw out for us a year into this pandemic?
It's that endurance of going, I'm going to get through this. I'm going to make the best out of this situation. I'm not going to let it affect, and I'm talking as my father's mind, the rest of my family. Because it wasn't like, as he's helping Lenny's giving short change to the three boys. The same with this pandemic. A couple times during it, I'd feel myself getting depressed in isolation. And I go, screw that, make yourself productive. And I do whatever the task was. And then I'd go out and take a long walk. And I would think of my father during this going, this would have been, he used to have a little expression when I talk about a problem, he'd pretend there'd be a piece of lint on his shoulder and he'd just flick it off. And he'd go, that's what I think about that. That's small potatoes. He probably would not be happy with this book, because he would say to me, I don't want you writing about me. There's plenty of other people that have done things just like your mom and I. But I felt, how could I leave this out of my story?
New York Times bestselling author Michael Togas. His new memoir is The Waters Between Us.